The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. Here we are in our second week on the Westwood One Network. We're super excited, and I'm excited as well. I'm back from Japan and ready to talk about the Alpha versus Omega match, the classic from Wrestle Kingdom 12. With the Omega himself, well, I'm the Alpha, and Kenny, the Omega, returns to Talk as Jericho, this time all by his lonesome, to tell you what went into the main event match of the Tokyo Dome, which a lot of people, a lot of huge experts are calling the best of Chris Jericho's career, the Shoal Stealer of the Night. People are saying match of the year. A couple of pundits even said it's the best match of all time. That's up for you to judge, but it was a different kind of match for myself and for Kenny as well. You'll hear what he thought about it and where he goes from here. You also going to hear the story behind Kenny's ring entrance at the Tokyo Dome, what inspired it, what worked correctly, and what was actually missed from it, how the match ended up becoming a no DQ brawl from the technical classic that we were both first expecting, which parts of the match were called on the fly and why, and which parts didn't really work out the way we thought they were going to do. Lots of inside the ring stories, talking about our favorite moments from the match and why taking table bumps in Japan is so much different than the States. It's an exclusive behind the scenes look from Kenny and Jericho, Alpha versus Omega, and let's get to it. Kenny Omega returns to Talk as Jericho to talk Alpha versus Omega starting now.
All right, so here in the Tokyo Dome Hotel with the Omega part of Alpha versus Omega, and how are you feeling?
I feel like I've been through a war. I feel like I've been beat up a little bit, but I feel really good. It's a great feeling to wake up after a momentous few months.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning and the end has come and gone, but the adrenaline still hasn't worn off. I still got a big smile on my face from ear to ear. It's been a fun ride.
It's funny when you get up in the morning too. Like it's hard to, for people that aren't in the business to understand this. Like, oh, you must be feeling pretty sore. It's like, yeah, it's like a badge of honor.
Yes.
You're right. I do. And then you look in the mirror and like, you're seeing all these marks and all these like slices and slashes. Yeah. And it's like, you don't even know where it came from.
No, yeah, exactly. That's actually part of the fun part too, is trying to decipher what's this one from? What's that one from? Like, how do I have a mark here? How do I have a cut here? And you try to replay the match in your head and try to figure out exactly where it happened. I've never actually drank alcohol before, but I guess that would be
right. When
you black out and you can't remember anything, trying to figure out.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I guess, you know, we've all watched The Hangover or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot like that. But yeah, it's like you said, it's like a badge of honor. And even though we're sore today, as long as you don't have any big injuries or injuries that are going to put you on the shelf, you're kind of proud of feeling that way. Like, you actually worked hard. And that was sort of the story of what we put together. Mm-hmm. Was that we were going to fight each other. And, you know, it felt like a fight while we were out there. And, yeah, I actually watched it back. I never really watched my stuff back that quickly, but it looked like a fight on tape. So,
you know what I always, too, because there'll be people that are going, oh, sure, they just had this big war, and the next day they're doing a podcast to talk about the match. But, like, you know, obviously, the guy, we all know, it's
kind of strange.
Yeah, yeah, but it's show business, right?
Right.
But in the match,
yep.
Like, in the heat of the match, it does feel like a fight, and there is,
yes,
there's some live rounds going back and forth.
Definitely.
You know, and people are saying, like, you guys are beating the shit out of each other. It's like, yeah, you're damn right we were.
Yeah, and, I mean, I can't remember a time when it was just kind of free time, you know, ad lib, like having fun, just walking, talking, and throwing some haymakers out there. It was a very physical and just very sort of free flowing fight.
Yeah.
And I mean that, and for anyone that trains, you know, mixed martial arts, boxing, any sort of contact sport. I mean, when you train hard and when you're sparring or whatever, you're actually throwing your stuff in. And yes, we have to treat this as a job. We don't want to kill each other for real, put someone in the grave or break their leg, break their arm or whatever. But, you know, there was a business to this match where we actually had to make it count. And we went in there with that understanding and beat each other up a little bit. And that's just how it goes sometimes.
But, you know, it's funny, too. Like, we never expected, like, when we, you know, we'll talk about how the genesis of this. But once we got into the angle of the Fukuoka beatdown and the press conference where, if anyone didn't see that, I attacked you from behind. I beat you up, bloodied you. And then the next day you kind of got your revenge at the press conference. So you attacked me, threw me over the table, big pull apart.
Yep.
It really changed the tone of the match that we were going to have.
Yes. And I still believe that that's because since day one, we've been gauging this thing by the feeling, the atmosphere of the building, the atmosphere of the people, the atmosphere of, you know, the people talking about it digitally on social media. And we changed things accordingly. We never knew where it was going to go. We sort of had an idea. But I think to allow this thing to evolve organically was probably the reason why it was so successful.
And it's funny because I was reading, because there's a lot of people at first that were focused on the age of Jericho and the age of Kennedy. Chris is 47. It's like, well, obviously he knew he couldn't keep up with Omega, so they did a no DQ hardcore, you know, it's going to be a garbage match. That was never that was never the intention to do no DQ. It just got so violent and people responded to it so well. We were like, this needs to not be what we originally wanted it to be, which was going to be kind of a Omega Okada style match.
And it got to a, originally, you know, we thought it was going to be that.
That's what we wanted,
And it got to a point where it was like, okay, it's so bad, we can't even be in the same room together now.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to do press conferences? How are we going to do media? Mm-hmm. We couldn't do it. We had to separate ourselves on the emergency press conference where I had to speak first, leave the room, then you had to come in. And it was to a point where it was like, it was going to be that. I do my bit, you do your bit. And then it was like, okay, wait a minute. You beat me up so bad, I've got to come back and beat the shit out of you now too.
Right.
It just, that's the way things evolved and it just felt right. So that's how we decided to go about it. And yeah, whatever, you're 47 and I'm 34, but I feel like I'm 67. So it doesn't even matter. You know what I mean? But that age was not even an issue.
It was not. But not at all. That was the original plan for not to be no DQ.
Right.
But let's go back to how this, so I'll tell you my side of it.
Sure.
And it was Don just calling me, Don Callis, obviously. Which, once again, I talked with Don about this, but Don is my friend for 27 years, 26 years. Don's original first manager, the Golden Sheik, was your uncle.
Right, yes.
And Don used to book you on independent Winnipeg shows.
He was the first guy to give me like a quote-unquote break. That was literally, we would consider that the WWE. Like, if you got booked by Don, you're on your way up, for real. And Don, I was kind of treated like the redheaded stepchild on the indies that I came up in, because I was sort
in Winnipeg.
Because I was sort of like a you know, the high spot guy. I just always wanted to do cool flashy moves. I was a huge fan of RVD, and actually of you as well. Cool. It was that era, right? So I was a fan of what RVD was doing in ECW, and that was about the time when you were doing the cruiserweight thing in WCW, right? So I was like, I'm watching the alternatives to WWE now. And I wanted to mirror that path. So I'm trying to be sort of cutting edge. I'm trying to do, like, you know, groundbreaking stuff. And my promotion in the city just wasn't really cool with that.
But River City Wrestling? Or?
It was the next promotion. Okay. Like, River City ceased to exist briefly, and then PCW started up. But it was pretty much just River City Wrestling Redux. And then it was Don saying, like, hey, you know what? This kid brings it. Like, he actually wants to steal the show. He's trying to do something new, and I can help him. And everyone's like, what do you mean? Like, you know, are you sure you don't want Vance Nevada and Bobby Jay and all these other guys?
Bobby Jay, whose original name when I was working with him was Bobby Jannetty.
Right.
Because he vaguely resembled Marty Jannetty.
Yeah. And you know what? His beautiful Bobby Jay character is actually really funny.
Yeah.
He's got a good little shtick that he can use in bar shows and all that. I still find it real funny. I think Vance was doing like a luchador catastrophe gimmick there.
Okay.
But anyway.
But instead of using those guys, he would give you a shot.
Right. Yeah. And everyone that went there had to wear masks. And he's like, no, I don't want you wearing a mask. Like, mm-hmm. I want to sort of develop you. And he didn't know I was, you know, related to the Sheik whatsoever.
He didn't even know that until the Sheik passed away, right?
Yeah. So it was just, he saw something in me. So he gave me an opportunity. And he even allowed me to develop promo skills. He gave me some mic time. So a lot of my early development was because of Don and that he believed in me, that I could be something.
And then conversely, when the opening for the job for the announcer of New Japan World, English announcer, yep. came up, you actually suggested to New Japan to use Don.
Oh, right. Yes. I didn't think he would even be interested in it.
Do you remember, first of all, when we did our podcast last Christmas?
Of course.
With the three of us?
Yep.
And Doug goes, hook me up, kid.
Yeah.
And then you're like, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Well, actually, at first it was like, well, you know, hook, you know, he was hook me up, kid, or whatever. And I was like, okay, real funny. Like, you got a great cushy government job. There's no way you'd want it.
Get
you
back
know
in this shit. Yeah.
But he's like, no, seriously, if there's anything I can do. And I was like, well, the timing was impeccable because we just lost Carino. And we needed somebody. And I'd always loved the way Don did his commentary. He was
tremendous.
Great.
Yeah, great
on commentary, great on the mic, understands the business. Mm-hmm. Just one of the greatest minds I've ever spoken to about wrestling. He gets it. He doesn't care. He's not trying to kiss anyone's ass or worried about what anyone thinks. So his opinion is truly what he feels and what he thinks. So I really thought he was a good guy for the job, not just because I had the relation to him and he was a friend and kind of somewhat family as well. But because I actually thought also on top of that, that he was the best guy for the job.
So who did you approach?
I talked to Gato right away. Yeah, I talked to Gato immediately. And I had said, like, hey, Gato, I know we need a commentary dude. And I have just the guy. You know, do you know Don Callis? And he goes, no. So I was like, okay, let me think. I'm like, Cyrus the Virus? No. So I'm like, the Jackal? And he's like, maybe. And I'm like, because you know,
Gato, a pretty good Gato.
Yeah, so Gato loves WWE guys. Yeah. So I'm trying to like, okay, the Jackal. He did the Jackal thing. I was like, so I try to send him like pictures of when he was doing the Truth Commission. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, I don't know that. So I was like, oh man. So I was like, okay. He says, well, just trust me. He's really, really good. One of the best like mic guys you could ever ask for. Like, he's our man. And he's like, okay, well, maybe we'll do like a trial basis. And then Rocky kind of stepped in and, you know, we were sort of going back and forth. And, you know, finally, and actually, well, I don't know if I should tell this story or not, but I said, if you need kind of proof as to how he talks, he's doing a podcast now.
This is great.
Yeah.
You got to tell this story.
Okay, I'll tell the story. He's like, he's actually doing a podcast now. So you could give it a listen. It's on the Jericho Network and they got like a weekly show. And of course, it isn't wrestling commentary. He says, but you can get a feel for how he is on the microphone. Mm. So they listen to him and he goes, oh, this is actually great. Okay, we're going to contact him. I was like, awesome. I'll tell Don right away. I said, Don, expect the call. And he's like, well, okay, we is in. You know, I was like, probably like today. Probably today. It's coming like right away. He's like, okay. And then I'm waiting. I'm like, anything? He's like, no. Anything? No. The next day, I get an email. They called Lance Storm. So I was like, oh no. So they offered the job to Lance Storm originally.
They listened to Lance and Don. Did they think that Don was Lance?
They thought that the person that I was trying to introduce them to was actually Lance Storm, because I said, here's this guy that was in ECW, a guy that was in WWE.
Lance Storm.
He's like, oh, I get it. Yeah, Lance Storm.
It's
he was
so
there.
Great.
Yeah.
It's so great.
So
he was so mad about that dude.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But then Lance was totally cool about it. And he was like, I think you probably mean Don Callis.
Yeah. So then Don gets the job.
Right.
And, right away does really good.
So yeah, exactly.
Then, going back to what I said, he calls me one day and goes, hey, what do you think about you and Kizani?
He's
the last guy that still used Carney.
Kizani, yeah.
At the Dome.
Yeah.
And he was expecting that I would be like, yeah, whatever. But I was like, what do you mean? He goes, what do you think? I said, well, it could happen. Like, it's right now, out of all the times in my career, now is the time, because I don't have a contract with WWE. I have really nothing going on in that time frame. This could really work.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'll go ask Kenny and see what he says.
Yeah. And I think like my reaction was probably, well, I don't know how my reaction was probably a lot different than yours, because he's like, what do you think of you and Jericho at the Dome? And at the time I was desperately searching for something to do at the Dome. I really wanted to make an impact. And it was almost like, come on, man, don't dangle the carrot. Mm. Like, this would be what I need. So don't throw fantasy matches at me when I've got nothing right now. And I was like, okay, yeah, of course it would be great, but like, why even bring that up, man? You know what I mean? He's like, well, no, I think he might actually want to do it. And I never knew your situation. Mm. And I never would have thought that you'd be interested in coming. Mm. So I just thought it was like, well, Jesus, if this is a possibility, I definitely want to do it. But even then, and at that point we were in contact because I'd done your podcast. I had your number, but I was still sort of really afraid to contact you directly about it because it was, you know, just on saying like, what about this idea? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to come to you and offend you saying like, hey, so what about
the dome,
yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because there's a process to these things, and there's a business side of things. It's not just, even if you want to do something, it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to sit on it. Like, if we really want to do it, like, I'm going to do everything I can to make it happen. So I was excited about the idea, but I didn't want to get my hopes up. But I was also afraid to contact you as well. Just I didn't want to look like a jackass. Yeah. In case I was like, you know, whatever. I was smashing. I was joking, kid, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I was totally joking. Yeah, yeah. And I'd be like,
I wasn't serious.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you think I would actually want to come wrestle you?
So when we finally got to the next stage then? Like, did we talk on the phone or did
next thing or? Don actually contacted me again. He said, have you gotten with Jericho yet? Or have you heard anything from Jericho? And I said, no. And I said, are you telling me he's actually like serious about it? He's like, I'm telling you, he actually is legitimately interested. Mm. So I said, wow, okay, well, let's do this then. Mm-hmm. And then I believe that's when I contacted you, or was it you contacted me? I'm not sure what it was. Yeah, it was one or the other, but yeah, I just said like, hey, like, let's make this happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is that you need mm-hmm. to make this happen, but whatever it is that you need, you deserve it. Mm-hmm. So let's make it happen.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, New Japan is kind of weird sometimes with how they organize their business meetings and all that, but they're really cool about it. And they even went to you, which I really appreciate.
Did you go to Gato? And say
I went to Gato and I said like, hey,
and Gato is the booker of New Japan. He's the boss. Yeah.
And I said like, I don't mind being the mediator. I can translate things back and forth if you want me to. You can use Tiger if you want, which in hindsight was maybe not the best decision.
Tiger, but not the best speaking of English. And it's so funny because he's, what, 90 years old? I mean, you've been living in New York City for 60 years. You still don't speak English. And it's okay. He's not going to hear this. If he does, he won't understand it anyways.
No, yep. There you go. Yeah.
So when you pitched it to Gato, was he like seriously? Or was he really?
same reaction. He was like, he's like, for real, you know, for real. I'm like, yeah, for real, man. So he's like, wow, I want to do that. And I was like, okay, so there's no concrete plan for me right now. And he's like, no, I was waiting for your idea, because they really wanted to shotgun me and Ibushi for the dome, just for like, hey, let's just,
because you guys have had a big history,
huge history, but it was just kind of like, well, you know, Kenny's had these good matches and that'll be a good match. So let's just do it. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, me, I'm not that kind of guy. Like, I don't just want to go out there and just to.
You want a reason. A story.
I want a reason. Yeah. And the story is so important. And the emotion is even more important than that. And the fact that we had discussed this idea well in advance, we had time to tell a story. Mm-hmm. And it was just something so groundbreaking and cool. Like, it's business changing. So I really wanted that to be the thing. And Gato was like, wow. And he's like, I want to do that. It's like, are you sure Jericho wants to do it? And I said, yeah, I'm sure. And he's like, can you do it? And I said, I think so. And I said, okay, well, can you put me in contact? Yes. And next thing you knew, they had at least two dudes from Japan.
Well, it's funny too, because I remember when we were trying to contact him, and like, Gato had two separate emails.
Yes.
And thing that's really weird too is that the emails I get from him when I finally got one, because it was like a month after, because we were like, did you hear anything? I'm like, no. Yeah. And I wasn't going to reach out to them.
Right.
And then one day I get an email and it's in
all Japanese.
Japanese,
And I remember someone's like, what the hell is this, man?
So whenever I try and look up Gato's email, I don't have a character on my phone. Right. For Gato, so I got to scroll.
Yeah. Because you would need the Japanese keyboard.
There's no way.
So
every time to this day, it's like, I got to scroll. But he said, you know, I want to talk to you about Kenny. And are you interested? And, you know, his emails are very broken English.
Of course.
You can understand. We all knew it was up. And that's when he said, we're going to be in New York. I was in New York. I had a book signing. I told him the dates. And they came with Gato, Tiger, who lives in New York, Rocky was there, and the
president,
Kobayashi,
yep.
was the president of New Japan. And that's when I knew, and I've told the story just last week when we talked about Wrestle Kingdom with Don, but I knew how serious they were when there was four of them coming from Japan. Yeah. And I was like, what, is there like Ring of Honor shows or something? He goes, no, we just came to talk to you. Yeah. And that's when you know that there's some some stuff.
Yep.
So, you know, long story short, it took a while to put the deal together.
A couple of misses in translation.
And but, I felt bad for you because you were always the guy that would be like hearing like, things are looking good. Things are falling apart.
Yeah.
Things are done.
Yeah.
And you were just like,
yeah.
Because Don was like, if things go really bad, tell Kenny because Kenny can freak out on him because he really wants this too.
Yeah. And the worst part was like when I – In my mind, I kept thinking about, like, what are the possible things that could go wrong? I'm thinking, okay, you know, it could be a money issue. It could be that they want to ask more from you than you have available, like, for in terms of availability. Mm-hmm. Because the way it usually works is, you know, they when they bring in a new talent, they kind of want some sort of commitment, like, you know, 5 dates or 6 dates or whatever. Yeah. So I'm thinking, like, okay, Jericho might not have that kind of time to give, especially now that he's touring.
Which he didn't. Yeah.
Exactly, he didn't. Whatsoever. And I was actually just cool with telling our story with videos if we had to leading up to the match, if we had to do it that way. But so I really just wanted to hammer home, like, we will tell the story and make it work regardless of how we have to do it. Even if we have to do it mainly just on social media, we will get people hyped.
Yeah.
If we have to do it with telling videos, we will get people hyped. If we have to do like the old school, like satellite phone conversation, you know what I mean? Like whatever, like we'll make sure people are looking forward to this match. But like, don't do like your classic deal. Like, okay, we're going to put Jericho on like a weekly deal and he's got to wrestle 10 dates or whatever. And it's got to be for X amount. Let's just make it happen.
Yeah, and at the time too, I didn't know what the reaction of the WWE would be. And with Vince,
right? Oh, that's true. Yeah. Cause we didn't know that. Yeah.
And I was kind of, cause I told you, like, I got to tell him.
Yep.
And I didn't know, like, he could tell me to go f*** yourself or what am I going to do in this situation? But when, you know, once we finally did kind of get it hammered out, I had an idea in mind because I actually came, you and I had spoken a little bit about an idea. Did we, I think you and I Don got in a call, didn't we?
Yep. We did a conference call.
We did
a conference call and we just kind of like hammered out, ideas. And, I remember that's when I was sort of very committed to what I just said previous, like however it is that we can make this work, let's make it work. So I was talking about like, how are we going to build this on Twitter? How are we going to build this using, you know, video promos and stuff like that. And I remember you suggesting like, well, no, I'll come down there. Yeah. I'll come down there. Like I'll even come down there to do media and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, whoa, okay. Well now this is going to be huge then. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
and that's what I wanted. Yeah. I didn't want to do like, if we're going to do this, do it right, especially when we put the deal together. And plus, I know how important it was to you, how important it is to me. Mm. This has to be great. And you can't be lazy about it and just do a video. And that worked out really well.
It did.
When that video dropped.
Yeah.
I was in England at the time and I woke up, you know, and, you know, 75 texts and then everyone's talking about it.
Yeah.
No one expected it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah, just get on that conference call and just sort of just feeling out how it would play out.
Mm-hmm.
It really kind of gave me goosebumps. Like this could be a real cool thing. Not only because we're going to hit all the mediums, like there's going to be a video, there's going to be sort of a social media battle, which people really believe in.
I forgot about that part before the video play.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was, I think that might've been okay. So what happened? Just to go back to the meeting.
Yeah.
In New York City was we talked about the you, me, and Don, and the suggestion was post a tweet first. Let's make it organic. We're like Jericho and Kenny are getting into this issue with each other.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what's their problem?
Yeah.
And what I did was I had my friend Jeff, who lives in Las Vegas, but also is from...
Cats?
No, not Jeff Katz.
Okay.
Never mention that name again to me.
Okay.
his name is Red Solo Cup Jeff, who's also from Winnipeg.
Oh.
So a Winnipegger, I said, I want you to tweet this. Yep. At 12 o'clock this evening of like, you know, Kenny Omega is just watched Okada and Omega and he's the best in the world. And I was like, best in the world is not even the best in Winnipeg. And then you said, don't meet your heroes because they're corporate stooges. And then we're off and running.
Yeah.
And it was funny to kind of see what each one of us would come up with.
Yeah.
But people thought that we had worked ourselves into this shoot.
Right. And this is sort of coming off when the Young Bucks and Cody and all them just sort of did the fake invasion angle.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the WWE guys were responding on Twitter using social media and saying dastardly things about one another. So it's like this kind of became commonplace. Mm-hmm. Like people take to social media now and they're not afraid to tag someone in a derogatory comment, or not afraid to just mention someone. So like, and what you said wasn't even really that derogatory. It was just an opinion. Mm-hmm. So, and which is what I liked about it, because it was like, oh, Kid Meg is a jerk off. It's like, okay, I see where this is going already.
If I was really going to say something about you, it would be something that like that. It couldn't be over the top.
Right, yeah. And I liked that it was subtle. And maybe, you know, people kind of got like, wait a minute. Is this something? Well, we don't know, because it could be anything. Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point when it started to kind of go off the rails and people started to get into like fantasy booker mode, they're like, I really have to side rail this thing. Like I have to pull this thing off the tracks. So I remember putting that tweet out saying like, hey, there's not going to be a payoff. So just kind of like F off, buddy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're here. I'm there.
And then everyone's like, Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, so you're not going to do the cruise either? It's
and
like,
that's what
no.
I was laughing about. Like, yeah. As if we would start an angle, you know, in September for a cruise the following October.
Right.
That's what people thought for a while. That it was going to be you know? And so I was going to ask you too, when we talked about kind of the Fukuoka attack, you know, because we had built up with the video.
Yep.
No, actually, sorry, the video.
Yeah.
When the video aired, I think it was in Osaka.
Osaka, yep.
Nobody knew, right?
No one knew. No one, absolutely no one. Well, I can't say no one knew because Don knew. Mm-hmm. I did clue in the Bucks, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I don't even know if Kevin knew, to be honest.
I'm not sure if he did. Maybe Don
might have clued him in. But
I know that Okada did an interview saying that he had no idea.
Yeah, no, none of those
he's
guys.
He's the champ.
Right, exactly.
When you came into the dressing room afterwards, was there like, were people buzzing about it, asking
about
it?
Oh, yeah. And they're just like, that was so cool. We had no idea. Mm-hmm. And it's like, people, like even the guys we were working with, they sort of like momentarily became fans again.
Yeah.
I was like, and that's what I'm like when I'm in the G1 or I'm watching like a Best of Super Juniors. That's the most fun time for me to be in the locker room, because I can watch all these tournament matches and I don't want to know the finishes. I don't want to know who's going up. Like I just kind of watch it and just kind of watch it play out, and it's fun to not know sometimes. And it wasn't like everyone's like, how couldn't you tell me? Like, I'm so offended. No, everyone was happy. They're like, that was so cool.
Because it's so rare to surprise people nowadays in this day and age. And if you can, especially, I was thinking, it's like, I'm not even there. I'm not even in control. I don't know who knows about this. I don't know who has to press play on the video. Yeah. All that stuff, right?
Yep.
And I couldn't believe that there wouldn't be some guy who's like a cable runner or something that's a big fan that would say, oh my gosh, this video's coming. Yes. Nothing happened.
Nothing.
Ever, you know?
We trusted the right people.
Yeah.
And nothing came out. So whoever was in the know that protected the secret, thank you very much. It was it's much appreciated.
I think too, like another thing I really liked about this, you mentioned like it makes us all fans. It made me a fan too, because to be able to do something where it's completely off the rocker, off the beaten path. Like I always say, it reminded me of kind of a Japanese wrestling version of Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather.
Yep.
Is that a match that no one ever thought was going to happen? So as soon as it's announced, it's got a huge buzz to it, just by proxy of the fact that it's happening,
right?
You know, and that buzz was everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It really became, I don't know if viral would be the right word, but it was
viral.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it
social
became
media
viral. Was
viral.
Because the announcement itself kind of became infectious. And then it spread all over Japan. It spread all over, you know, social media especially. And it really gave people something to look forward to well in advance for the Dome. But then they thought, okay, there's the announcement. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
See you guys there.
Right.
And then we just one-upped it from there again, and we just kept going with it,
I knew that there had to be a physical altercation.
Yeah, which is...
Because just announcing it is great, but, I mean, that's a kind of a... That's even... Like, if Brock announces a match, for example, Brock announces, you don't see much, but there will be some sort of build-up to it.
Of course.
And to do the old... I mean, gosh, it's as simple as the time-honored tradition of wrestling. Turn the lights off.
Yep.
Turn them on.
There he is.
And there he is.
Yeah.
With the decoy video, right?
Yeah.
And that, to me, was a really cool moment because, you know, the Japanese aren't to hear them all buzzing.
Right.
You know, and then you turn it and off we go.
Yeah, it was really cool. And that sort of brought me back to, like, you know, the golden age when I was watching, you know, before I got into the business, just... They would do that stuff all the time, you know, the video decoy or
famous
some
ECW
ECW thing, or even in, you know, in the Attitude Era, you know, guy'd be standing on the ramp as a decoy, but then, you know, from behind here comes someone else. Like, it's
right.
We just don't do that here, and I think not that was also elevated by the fact that no one thought they would see you in the flesh before the actual dome. Like, why would you come to Fukuoka? You know, and that was kind of the thing too, was like, maybe if you did come down, it'd be Tokyo. You know what I mean? Just for ease of travel.
Right.
But you came all the way out to Fukuoka. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah, and I was worried once again that someone's going to see me.
Right,
I
fly in to Haneda.
And then take another, stay overnight in Haneda, then take another flight to Fukuoka. And then I even check into a hotel all day.
Yeah.
Like, someone's going to see. And then get to the venue, secret room. We meet, secret meeting, go over it.
It was destiny, I suppose. Somehow came off without a hitch. It's crazy.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho inviting you to the first ever Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Picture this: rock and roll, wrestling, comedy, live podcasting, all on the open ocean from October 27th to the 31st, 2018, from Miami to Nassau. I'm bringing Hall of Fame wrestlers, some of the greatest rock and roll bands on the planet, and putting the first wrestling ring on a cruise ship ever. Don't be a stupid idiot. Make the list. Check us out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com.
This is Talk is Jericho.
So let's talk about the actual, about the match itself. So we mentioned how we kind of changed the idea and the focus of the match from being kind of more of a technical, quote unquote, you know, Omega classic match to being more of this no DQ brawlish match, but still having some real good technique to it.
Yes. And definitely, like, the whole dynamic changed after the press conference. Well, after the attack from behind the press conference, we really felt that we had to go about it this way. And I remember we had a small little discussion about, like, do we make this thing a no DQ? Because it's gonna kind of go a little crazy, or it has the possibility to go crazy. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to put the referee in a situation where it was like, okay, these guys aren't even abiding by any rules.
Which I find they do quite a bit in New Japan. They did. It yesterday on the show. Like,
yeah.
I would say 4 out of 9 matches might as well have been no DQs.
Agreed.
But at least for us, it was.
Right.
So there's an excuse to do all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's an excuse for us to do it right in front of the referee's face.
Yeah.
We don't have to worry about. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We don't have to worry about burying the referee.
No. And all we wanted was just for the referee to try to enforce the rules, you know, but of course there's no DQ, so he really can't.
Right. Do you remember when the first time I had you in the hold, when you went for the Frankensteiner, put you in the walls?
Yeah, yeah.
You made it to the ropes. Uno, the referee, he was like counting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's no DQ.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He kept counting.
I think he said no DQ, jackass. That's what it was. Yeah.
It's no DQ. And he's looking at me with this weird look.
Yeah, like, huh?
It's no DQ. Yeah. He doesn't have to let go of the ropes. He don't have to let go.
Yeah.
But yeah, but we wanted to have that option to be able to do what we want with the freedom of it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, I got that idea from, I worked a program with Rey Mysterio, one of my all-time favorite programs.
Oh, yeah.
In 2009. Mm-hmm. And they have this pay-per-view called Extreme Rules.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where everyone is cage match and ladder match and, you know, chair match and table match. And I was like, they're like, well, we're going to put you in a cage. I'm like, there's no reason for this to be in a cage. The whole concept of Rey Mysterio and what we do is, you know, I mean, Rey, it's all about diving, but, you know, there's he can't even do a 619 in a cage.
Yeah, well, he'd clip his toes in the cage, yeah.
So, like, what are you going to do then? I'm like, well, can't we just make it like a no DQ or an extreme rules match?
Yeah.
He goes, well, what are you going to do? I said, that's the point. We don't have to do anything, but we build it all. We do a great match and build it up to one chair spot at the end. There's your extreme rules or no DQ.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy, and we can still keep the integrity of our match quality and what we're doing here. And that's kind of what I think we wanted to do for this as well.
Yeah, and I think it worked out great. Yeah. I'm looking back at it now. It was cool just to feel like it was really just us out there.
Mm.
Two guys fighting. You know, sometimes you feel like you're more cognitive of the referee being there as a presence, or, you know, the seconds or whatever. But I really felt like it was just there could have been 36,000 people there or whatever it was, or there could have been zero. I just felt like it was just me and you fighting around trying to beat the crap out of each other. And that was a real cool feeling, not having to really worry about anything. Just go by the feeling of it, which is pretty much how the entire angle came to be.
Mm-hmm.
Was we felt the atmosphere, we felt the emotion, and we adapted to that. And even in the match, I don't know how much in depth.
We can give some of our tricks away. Not all
right.
Them, but
what people may or may not know was that there was a lot of stuff just on the fly, and it just we just tossed it in there because it just felt right.
Well, one of my favorite ones is that earlier in the day we had gone to the dome to kind of look around. We had some ideas. We had gone to the dojo the couple days before and come up with a template of what we want to do.
Yeah.
But then you actually have to go to the dome and see the setup.
Of course. Yep.
And so one of the things that we were thinking was for me to put you in the walls on the floor.
Yep.
And then to you don't go and slingshot you.
Yep.
And you land on something and give me a moonsault.
Yep.
Barricade, stairs, whatever it may be. So what did we decide to do?
Well, Tana's match had just finished. We were up. We were already suited up, ready to go. We had to go. And we decided.
But what the original idea was when we were out there.
Oh, when you're out there. Yeah. So I went to go eyeball the area by myself, just, because there's staff and everything's heavily kayfabed.
It's really kayfabed. Yeah.
The fences of the Tokyo Dome, because there's like a sort of a tier level where the floor section is, it drops down from the stage that the ring is on.
Yeah, there's like a ledge there, like a little pit or something.
Yeah, so the guardrails actually are raised very high from the floor. So taking a slingshot and somehow dead jumping to the guardrail, which is really rickety, was impossible. But there was this other guardrail that was protecting the scaffolding, like the lighting rig. And I thought, okay, well, this is more sturdy. I can do that. And then the area that I wanted to do it at had a camera screwed in, so it was just blocking the path to do it in. Okay, let's go to the opposite way. That's the only one that isn't taped down, so it's really rickety too. And it's like, okay, but wait a minute. There's got to be a way to do this. Okay, what if I one step it and then hop up to the actual like
the scaffold?
The actual scaffolding itself. And like, okay, that's cool. Yes, and I'll hit this cool moonsault.
And we went through it. We're like, yeah, it's gonna be great. We're gonna do a double count out.
Yeah.
What we forgot is that there's seven matches before ours with everybody doing every move under the sun.
So we're
watching Tanahashi's match, who's right before us.
Yeah, and we're just going over our stuff. Just one last small little clarification process.
We're in the dressing room, and because we're in the dome, we both have to take like a van to drive us around the dome.
Yeah, which is cool because you actually leave the dome.
Yeah.
And you're on like the street.
Right.
Yeah, you're just kind of on the street for a second. You have to circle around and go back into the dome.
And when you go in the dome, they have two doors like an air portal. And you walk in one door and it closes. And then the other door opens because it's a dome. And if you open the door, it's like it would deflate or something.
Yeah. The air pressurization.
So we're in our secret room right next to basically the stage.
Right. And, Nick and Matt are there because they always go out with me for the big matches, and they're just kind of listening in. And they said, like, hey, like that idea is almost like a carbon copy of what Ospreay just did. And I was like, oh, yeah, leave it to the junior guys to literally, to not only go 20 minutes over their time, but to want to do every move that's ever existed in pro wrestling. And I was like, okay, you know what? I can't even get mad because that's just like, that's the nature of the beast. That's just how they will always be.
Yeah.
And I said, and we're good enough to come up with something different.
Right.
So
let's
be the guys to do that.
Yeah.
And because they were like,
the other way you can look at it is like, well, it's our match and it's different from theirs and you'll do it better. But deep down inside, you're like, ugh.
Yeah. No, deep down inside, I was like, oh, that sucks because that was such a cool idea.
Yeah.
But I also had sort of a point of pride where I was like, no, we can be the guys to be the bigger man and show them that we can adapt to the situation.
And I said, with like 45 years of experience between us, we can't think of something else right now.
Yeah.
We don't need to be here.
But the funny thing was, it was like, if we can't think of something else, like, whatever, we shouldn't be here. And then what we came up with was like, let's just play around on the outside and then get back to the ring.
But we'll figure something out. Yeah, exactly. When we're out there.
Yeah, and then we did.
Yeah,
and that was actually one of the most fun parts of the match for me, because I'm throwing tables, throwing monitors. I put a table on you, improv, and stomped you off the girder instead of, and then the suplex back in.
Well, it was cool because the idea was that right beforehand you did the springboard crossbody to the floor.
Yes,
and the idea was to hit Don Callis. I would move out of the way, and you would hit Don.
Yeah.
But when you jumped, it's not exactly what happened.
Right. Oh, yeah. Because when I stood up on the top, I saw just how far Don was. He was like almost in the front row of where the fans are.
Yeah.
And for the people that don't know, like, there's a huge gap. Like, the guardrail is way further in the Tokyo Dome for us on that show specifically. And then there's another big space. Then there's a commentary table. And then there's another big space in the front row. And Don was almost near the front row. So we're talking like a 30-foot leap. I'm like, okay, I used to have hops back in the day. But even in the day, like, I don't even know if I can make this jump. I said, okay, I'll aim for Jericho, like how we'd planned. He's going to bail. And Don's probably not going to be there. But the table's there. So I'm just going to make it look like I'm losing all control and whatever happens, happens. And I ended up clipping Don and then crash and burning through the table, and it looked better than how I pictured
Unbelievable.
It.
Unbelievable. So you're deciding this right before you do
literally,
the springboard?
As I'm seeing it, I'm kind of like scanning the situation. And then when I was up in the air and kind of, you know, you briefly stand on the top of the springboard, I was like, this is probably the way to do it is to kind of jump cleanly, but then make it look like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Sort of do like the Jeff Hardy AJ thing where you're kind of flailing your limbs, you know?
It's like the Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Right, exactly.
Like,
running
in the air for a bit and then just goes,
yeah, bonk. Yeah.
And that, we had discussed, oh, just hit me with the monitors or, and you started just throwing all this shit on me.
Yep.
And I remember Kevin Kelly going, we've lost transmission.
Yeah.
Because we actually threw something on the ground where batteries came out of it.
Right.
Cut off someone's mic.
Right, yeah. And I that's what I thought too, was like, I pulled cables from the monitor because, you know, I didn't want throwing the monitor to like lift up something, you know. And there were cell phones on the ground, like
Don's cell phone was right beside the walls on you.
So I wanted it to be as clean as possible when I started throwing the stuff around. And then I heard Kevin when I pulled the cord, like, we've lost transmission. I'm sorry, folks. And I was like, I really hope not.
Can you imagine if the whole thing just went black? Yeah, just 90,000 subscribers. Yeah. Like,
Bars.
Yeah. But then the idea that you had was like, you said, throw the table. Cause at the press conference, once again, just improv, I just picked up a table and threw it at you and everyone loved it.
It was just,
Did you see the video game, 8-bit?
Yeah, of course.
Gift the guy ever fight?
Yes. That guy's a genius. He always, Anytime there's like a scene, sort of like an iconic scene in pro wrestling, he tries to recreate it using old like Super Nintendo graphics. So to do just the table throw, I was like, wow, it had that much of an impact, huh?
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to stick with it.
And then,
you
know? Don Callis with the sad Don with the
neck brace. Yeah.
With the neck brace. Did you see the one where...
The Christmas one, the Christmas special?
Yeah.
What the heck?
Well, so at the very end of the press conference, after Ken and I beat each other up and Kenny leaves and I leave, there's kind of chaos and people are kind of cleaning up. And then you just see Don wearing a neck brace walk in front of the camera because he had taken a code breaker.
Yeah.
But the best gif of it was where Don walks from, and it's the theme music from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I didn't see that one.
It looks total Larry David.
But you
said throw the table. So I did. And then you threw it back on me.
Yep.
You actually slammed me on the floor, then threw it on me. I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
Now I know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And because you just decided, because I'd seen you jump off the apron.
Yeah, because I know you. We just talked about you had seen my match with Trent. So I was like, okay, he at least saw that one. So he knows that I do that. So I felt like I did it. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to climb super high in this thing. Just in case you're really like tentative about what the hell is this backyard idiot doing, you know what I mean? But I was like, here we go.
It was perfect.
Yeah, it was great.
Had we had you know some more time, we probably would have come up with that.
Yeah.
But it was even better than the moonsault, because once again we'd seen 55 moonsaults.
We didn't see
anybody jump off a scaffold through a table on the, you know, that's placed on top of his hated rival.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? And again, it didn't look like this choreographed thing either. It was just like, it was there. We did it.
Yeah, so it's cool.
Yeah.
So like a couple of things too that it's interesting, I think, to point out to some people is like when you're in Japan, the furniture that you use as plunder is very different here.
Oh yeah.
Tables being one of them.
Yeah.
They explain what the tables are like here.
Well, they're like solid oak, 250 pounds. There's no way you're breaking them at all. But oppositely, the chairs are really flimsy.
Right.
So it's the opposite, right? Because, I mean, American steel folding chairs got a little bit to it. You can't break those.
They're not even steel folding chairs.
No, they're steel frame. Yeah. But then wood and...
Like padding.
Wood,
like
cardboard,
cushion?
And padding. Yeah, a small little cushion.
Yeah. And it's like it's screwed onto the middle.
Yes. Yeah.
And you even mentioned this. And thank God you did, because, you said when you hit the chair, it might the pad might pop out.
Yes.
And so it's like, okay, well, instead of throwing one chair, and I'll throw a few chairs in just in case. By the end, all three of those freaking things were popped out and dead and all over the place. And there's even a great spot, you guys can go back and watch this, where the Kenny gives me a Snapdragon. I stand up in the corner and I grab the chair out of the corner where it's been wedged into the turnbuckle and hit you with it.
Yep.
When I pulled the chair out, the cushion fell off.
Yep.
I can't go get another chair.
Right.
I can't hit you with a...
Turn it sideways, hit me with a piping.
Yeah, with a steel frame. So I grabbed the cushion and held it where it was supposed to be. And when I hit you with the chair, I let go of it.
Yeah.
So that cushion was never attached, but it hits you in the head and flies up in the air and looks like I tattooed you with the thing, just go up in the air, right?
Yeah, and I liked how it rolled down the ring like a blown tire. That was great.
See, stuff that you guys never know of this thing. And then later on the match, about 10 minutes later, I'm like, where are all these freaking screws?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was like, hey, this is really getting dangerous. There's
all
these loose screws in the ring. I swear to God, there were like 8 to 10 of them. And this is kind of where I would think, like, you know, the referee's going to shuffle him out. And he's just kind of just watching
standing
us.
There.
And I was like, oh, boy. Okay, on the cell, I'm going to start, like, making snow angels on the ring, just, like, fling these things out of here, because we still got to bump. You know what I mean?
Can you imagine bumping onto one of those screws?
I don't even want to think
about
it.
That'd be worse than bumping onto a chair or a table.
On tacks or anything.
Anything.
A glass tax, like those screws would have just really messed you up.
Oh. And once again, the red shoes, good old Uno, there's quite a few moments in that match where he was clued out. I'm like, would you get the screws?
Yeah.
Kick the screws out. But you're talking about the table, and it is a really thick, like a table in WWE is almost like a church picnic table.
Right.
It's very thin.
Mm-hmm.
Here, like you said, it's about, I don't know, 2 inches thick.
Yeah, about that. Yep.
And so to take the bump out of the corner through it, like, I know it's going to break, but I still don't know for sure because I've never taken a bump through a Japanese table.
Right.
And I remember Sabu, when he first started doing that in the early 90s, would moonsault the table.
Never break.
It would never break. And he would get more angry and more angry. I think that kind of killed him in so many ways.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, like, this is going to be, thankfully it broke, but it's stuff that you never think of when you've been working so many years in a certain place and then coming here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's I suppose it's a culture thing. Because, I mean, I'd sort of asked before, like, hey, what about getting, like, the prop tables like they have in America? You know what I mean? Like,
steel chairs.
Order them in. Just whatever. And he's like, no, that's not Japanese style.
Yeah.
I was like, but it's kind of for our safety. You know what I mean? But I guess we don't use tables that much. You know, so I kind of get it. But, boy, like, last year in my ladder match that I had with Michael Elgin, I took a powerbomb from near the top of the ladder onto two tables, and I just bounced off of it.
Oh,
bounced off of it on my lower back. And
in Japan.
Oof. Yeah. So it was like, it looked worse than actually crashing through it, but like,
but there's an expectation. Way worse.
Yeah. There's an expectation where you're going to crash through it. And some people were like, oh, well then he probably didn't hurt as bad because it didn't break. You know what I mean?
But hurt worse.
Worse.
And that's
course.
What I was envisioning. Cause I'd fall right off the second turnbuckle. Yeah. Through the table, if it doesn't break, what if it just tips over? Then suddenly I'm taking taking a belly to back on my head or whatever it may be. You don't know.
Taking the dangerous backdrop.
The dangerous backdrop. Yeah. I'll talk a little bit about your ring entrance.
And oh my God. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to put the production team on blast, but here we go. I had this idea.
They deserve it.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah.
So I had gotten into contact with War Machines guys to make some cool armor for me. And I had this idea where, you know, I'd been talking lately about being the god of professional wrestling.
Mm.
So let's roll with that. Rather than, because I wanted a different theme every year for Tokyo Dome. Last year we had this really cool Terminator thing that we did. They had this whole film crew. I had spent like this entire evening pretty much outside in winter in the nude filming like a mock Terminator scene.
Oh, like when he appears.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was literally like, you've felt the weather here right now. It's pretty frigid.
It's cold. Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine like 9 hours of that filming
naked.
Yeah. With no clothes on. But I mean, totally worth it. I love the way it turned out. And I thought like, hey, let's do that again. And if I never suggested it, it never would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, this year I have another idea. You know, lately I've been kind of doing the God of Pro Wrestling thing. I'm sort of changing my statement. I don't want to be the cleaner anymore. I kind of want to ease into this change the world thing.
Which, by the way, the new t-shirt goes on sale today. Very good timing on ProWrestlingTees.com.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Very good. They made that in which they time with that. Yo, so go check that out at ProWrestlingTees.com.
Please do. And And so I had this idea where we'd have paid extras on the stage, kind of in Egyptian garb. And my idea was heavily influenced actually originally from like the 1990s, like X-Men cartoon with Apocalypse, where like Apocalypse was the most strongest mutant and people looked at him as a god, even though he wasn't a god. He was just a super strong mutant. So that's why I wanted to go with the bluish colors, and you know, like you have the video game tropes and all that, like a, you know, I'm a Stargate fan, you know, Destiny of the game or whatever, Overwatch. So it's like I came up with that idea to have like sort of like this cyber Anubis mask and this huge ray gun, and you know, while these people are kind of doing their daily tasks on the video screens, there's like pyramids in the background, and you know, I appear and everyone stops what they're doing and they start praying to the god of wrestling, and then it goes to like Shibuya in Tokyo, where everyone's walking that super famous busy crosswalk, and then I appear in the video wall.
It's like Times Square with all the big screens.
And it's like sensory overload imagery of all like my best matches of the year, just like and everyone stops exactly what they're doing in the crosswalk, and they all start like worshiping this image of me wrestling. Huge like ego trip thing, you know what I mean? Just like
it's a great idea.
Yeah, it was just ridiculous, but like. I felt that it really fit for our thing. Was like I was starting to get sympathy as a baby face, but at the same time, I also still wanted to have that chip on my shoulder where I was like, yes, have sympathy for me because I'm your god. You know what I mean? Because I didn't want to go full baby yet, and I didn't have clearance to. So I thought maybe it would have been really cool and go with the getup that I'd made that I wanted to make, and then. I had the whole meeting with everyone, and they're like, yeah, that's really cool, really cool.
How long ago was it?
That was right at, we had it at Fukuoka.
Okay.
So yeah.
You got
so
good,
there, yeah, that, you there got, was time. That was in October,
almost
right?
A month. Fukuoka was December 10th. So it's still.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, still, yeah, it's 3 weeks change.
Yeah.
Change.
Oh, so then you know what? Maybe, no. Then maybe I messed up.
In Osaka before, with the video?
It might have been post Osaka. Okay. So they had plenty of time.
Good, so they got time.
Yeah. And then we had the other meeting in Fukuoka where I talked about, you know what, maybe I want to have big match music too, because I had this special big match Terminator music last year. So like I want big match music for this one too, if possible. And I kind of wanted it to be like this. And I sort of played them some samples about how the intro would go, because it would work with the whole production. And they're like, oh, great idea. Yeah, let's do it, no problem. And then I had talked to one of the office guys when I had arrived on the 1st. And I said, like, hey, I just want to ask, how is everything shaping up for that? And could you send me, like, an MP3 file of how the new theme sounds and all that? And he's like, yeah, sure, I can do that. He says, expect it at around 4 p.m. today. Great, I can't wait. And then I get a message at 4 p.m. This is the message from New Japan office. Sorry, we had no time. I was like, oh,
that's crazy.
What?
Now, see, once again, this is, I mean, and listen, New Japan, they're growing, it's great, but like, right. This is a double main event,
yeah.
Right? So it's,
yeah.
it, some would say the main event on a worldwide basis, because that's some say it's the truth. We break in, open these doors in the States, and everyone's excited about Alpha versus Omega.
Yep.
Unbelievable. And remind me, I have to tell you a great Alpha vs. Omega story after this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and for them, like, I have to compare it to WWE because that's where I came from.
Sure.
This would never happen. They would be working on this. It's the top guy in the main event, and they didn't have time. It's like, what? Right.
And this thing is like, and I try to understand the situation. Okay, you didn't have time. Okay, then what took up your time? Mm-hmm. Because we had a lot of time last year to do it. And you made time for it last year.
And there wasn't any other elaborate entrances like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
There was costumes and stuff.
Right, right. But that's up to a lot of that's up to the wrestler. Like,
sure.
They decide that, what they want their look to be, and then they just clear it with the office. Mm. So I was thinking like, wow, then there must really be a lot of work being put into someone else's thing. So I thought like Naito and Okada are going to do something really out there.
Fly out in a spaceship or something.
Real. And then, you know, when our match ended... And I had watched their entrances. It was just two normal entrances. It's like, what does this no time thing come in? Like, were there undercuts? Like, we had the budget. We had, there should have been time. And if not, there should have been just more communication. But again, that's what happens when, you know, your wrestling company is owned by actually another company. And there's that disconnect.
By basically a trading card anime company.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, this happened. I can't say it happens all the time, but sometimes it happens where the one team that's responsible for doing something doesn't communicate with the other team. But I mean, terrible timing for it to happen for the main event of the Tokyo Dome. So
still a great costume though.
Right. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, I have this costume and it would kind of be a waste to not use it because I definitely wanted to use new gear for the show anyway. And the gear went so well with the armor. So it's like, I have to use everything. Mm-hmm. And then I remember showing you, I was like, there's no reason for me to come out like this. And it's ridiculous, but what do you think? And I think you said like, well, pro wrestling's ridiculous, so who cares? You know what I mean? And then that was it.
You said I got this really fake looking gun.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah.
So you remember at WrestleMania 19 when Shawn Michaels came up with that confetti cannon that worked like 2 times out of the 8 times you were supposed to shoot it?
Yeah.
So it's better than that.
Yeah.
You know? just as a couple more stories, another great story too. And I like people to understand, like, listen, you saw the match, kicked ass, amazing, but there's always little things that go on behind the scenes. So one of the spots that we had discussed, I had watched this match because our situation reminded me of the unsanctioned match I had against Shawn Michaels. Now,
yes,
the stakes weren't as high because I punched his wife for real.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Which was a terrible mistake, but it raised the stakes.
Yes.
So that it was an unsanctioned match. And it was even more of a war than ours.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And one of the spots was I put Shawn on the walls. Once again, there's no rope break. He grabs a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
And then sprays it at me. So when we were at the dojo, I spray that thing to Gato. And Gato's like, oh, you can't use fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
Because I think he was scared it was like going to be like a foaming thing or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's generally the type that they use is they use the foam ones here.
The old school from the 50s.
So, yeah. Yes. So I think he was worried about like, I don't even know where we would get the prop one.
Like a CO2
The big funnel thing. You know, right. You got the huge cloud.
And then we spoke about using maybe Rocky Romero.
Because he had the jetpack.
Had a jetpack cannon. Yeah. But then Gato suggested cold spray.
Yeah.
Which was your gimmick.
My gimmick in 2015.
Right.
Yeah. But it makes sense.
But then we have to make sure we get a can that shoots enough spray.
Yep.
But then he left that up to you to get.
Yes. And then there were stores that had carried this. And it was like, oh, yeah, for sure. I'll just take my 5-minute jaunt. I'll pick up a ton of cans. I show up. Nothing. They don't sell them anymore. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, go to a couple other pharmacies. I found these little skinny, like the size of like Axe spray cans. Like that's not visual at all. That's going to be terrible. So here I am, day of the show. I think call time was like 1:00. It's 11:30. I have nothing. So I'm calling around to my contacts that actually may know how to solve this issue. And eventually I found an MMA goods store that kind of, you know, supplies, you know, kick pads and punching bags and gloves and all that. And they still stocked the old school huge cans that we were using at the time when I was teaming with Matt and Nick a lot doing the Elite thing with the cold spray. So luckily at the 11th hour, we got the big cans that we used to use, but there was only 3. And there's another snafu as well.
Tell me about that.
Yeah.
One.
So.
Because at first, did you go to the wrong side at first?
Nope.
Okay.
I did not. Okay. I did everything I was supposed to do. The problem was, so I had these cans and I rigged them up myself. There was like a kind of like a milk crate box underneath the ring. And I'd put tape on the box on the bottom and stuck the can to it. And when I had went to put it on the box, because I was instructed there's a box there for you. So the can's elevated, make it easy to grab. And just put the can wherever you want it to go. Okay, great. But on one of the sides in one of the boxes, there was a first aid kit. And I'm thinking, okay, that's just for emergency, whatever. It's in the back. I'm not worried about it. But because of everything that happened with my entrance and all that, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, like, what are the chances someone's going to have this hideous injury and they're going to grab that first aid kit? It's going to knock the cans over. They're going to be nowhere to be found. I don't know. Who knows?
Here's what I love about wrestling, too. Never mind the fact that someone has a hideous injury. Just don't knock over our cold
spray. Right, exactly. Yeah, right. So then we're watching the junior matches, and I see Marty in the midst of this match, for whatever reason, go into one of the corners.
Right.
And he's fumbling around under the ring, and he rips out the first aid kit. And I'm thinking, he was doing that without any regard to what was going on under there.
He put tape around his hand or something.
Yes, because he had his fingers broken.
Fingers broken.
And then he had baby powder in there as well.
That's right.
something like, Marty doesn't know that we need that.
Oh, no.
And even if he knew, he's so lost in the moment, he probably would have just knocked our cans everywhere anyway. And then we'd put cans in both corners. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, like the corner we ended up being positioned in was that one that Marty had to grab the first aid kit in. So I'm literally like, I can't remember like in my mind, but I was way further. My arm was way further into the ring than it should have been. And
because I was like, how far is he going? I got much room left.
Yeah. So
I had my ass sticking straight out of the bottom.
Right. And I was way under there. Finally, I grabbed one of them and I'm like, okay, we can finally go. But I didn't even know what to do. I was like, I may grab the come along and pull myself out. Like, there's nothing, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So it's just a lot of, you know, people watch the match, and I even watched the match, and we knew all this stuff had happened, and I was worried that it would be very visible and
for things that we didn't like.
Yeah. But you couldn't tell. But so now that's what makes it funny talking about it now. All these little strange things beyond our control that had happened either before our match or during the match that, you know, for example, Red Shoes, you know, we left up to Red Shoes or whatever.
Yeah, he just was just looking at us, staring with us with dead eyes.
Right.
You remember that spot that we talked to you about 50 times because you kept asking me about it?
Yeah.
This is the one.
Yeah, do something.
Yeah. You know? But it's funny because I always like the people to understand, like, there's so much that goes into having a match. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, and people will always judge. But there's always little factors.
Of course.
That everything has to go. If you want a perfect match or a great match, sometimes one little thing can go wrong. And either you're a pro or you're not.
Yep.
And I told you this yesterday when I had is a famous match, one of my first great matches I had in WWE, Last Man Standing with Triple H.
Oh.
We're standing in the back and there's big signs everywhere. Do not touch the announce table.
Oh, yeah.
Stay away from the announce table. Because the finish was, I think, a pedigree through the announce table would make sense. Probably,
I would say he was doing that at that time.
Perry Saturn and China are out there screwing around and something happens and one gets knocked in the other and bam, there goes the table. And I remember Hunter going, they just broke that table. I'm like, what? Like, that's our finish. That's the whole finish.
Yep.
And so we had to come up with a whole different thing where there was the Spanish announce table. So I slam him on it. I'm going to moonsault him. He gets up and belly to backs me on it. There's our finish. But, you know, still, it's like, what do you do?
Yeah. And I mean, that was sort of, but that was also the beauty of our match with the way we called it, the way we had built to it. And I remember saying even to you in the back, and I said, you know, we have spots in this match. We do.
Yeah.
There is stuff that we had called, of course.
Yeah.
I said, we could blow all of it, but this match will still come off looking good because of the aggression.
Yeah.
So there's so much stuff that went wrong, like that you don't even realize. Yeah. But.
And we'll never tell.
Yeah. But everything just still looked like hard hitting and as clean as it should in a brawl, like in a fight kind of match.
Yeah. And once again, like having the match is like, this is really good. Dome shows are hard. Same with WrestleMania because the sound goes up to the ceiling.
Yeah, it gets lost in the air.
So it's not the same as being in front of this crazy crowd. You don't have the same buzz.
Yep.
But coming through the curtain and see the reaction of all the office and the boys and Tiger Hattori was he was almost crying, you know?
Yeah.
And then the social media reaction and the critics reaction. It's like, it blew my mind.
Which is crazy. It's still continuing, which is cool because there's people that still haven't had a chance to see it.
Yeah.
You know? People have their normal lives. Life continues and they have to watch it at a realistic time for their schedules. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. They can't, not everyone can stay up till 6 a.m. or whatever it was. So for the people that haven't watched it or just watching now or whatever, I hope you enjoy it or do enjoy it. And thank you for everything.
You know, what was really cool is that, so New York's a huge wrestling market, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was a big snowstorm where everyone got snow days.
Oh,
If it was Thursday night, Friday morning.
Yeah.
So I had got so many tweets going, I was praying for a miracle. And I got one. It snowed out. I don't have to go to work or school tomorrow. I'm going to get New Japan World, and there's my party for the night.
Yeah, you know? Awesome.
And so, I said, literally thousands of tweets.
Yep.
Match of the year, 7 stars, great match, this and the other thing. And to me, I was like, exceeded expectations. And I was like, what were you guys expecting? I knew it was going to be great.
Yep.
But just to see that, it's real gratifying. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I knew it was going to be as good as it could be for exactly what we were going to tell.
Right.
But I feel that people, I felt it. I was worried that people had come to expect a certain style with New Japan.
Yes. Especially that, from you, too.
Yeah, especially from me. So I thought that on the biggest show of the year, for me to step completely out of my comfort zone and try something completely new from what I've been doing, are people going to be disappointed based on that? And then to hear the feedback from them saying, like, you know, this is maybe one of my favorite performances you've had, and like, you far exceeded any expectation. Thank you for restoring my faith in wrestling. Those are the best kinds of compliments I can get. Like, you know, stars and all that, they're great. It's great. You know what I mean? I like it. I get a lot of them. You know what I mean? But for to touch people on a more personal level, where it was like, you know,
exactly.
Where it's like, you know what? I don't mind being a bag of shit today because I didn't sleep because I watched your match. Like, that's a great compliment.
Right,
you know what I mean?
These,
like,
these are people with real lives and real jobs. And,
exactly.
You know, we're very fortunate that we get make some really good money to do this. Other people have to get up and work 8 hours a day. And if they miss, just take a day off. I can't.
Yeah.
If I take a day off, I can't pay the light bill or whatever. So, like you said, like, and that's another reason why I always loved the concept of this, because it gave wrestling fans something to really be excited about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one other little thing is when they did the pay-per-view in WWE of Strowman versus Brock and Cena versus Reigns on like a lower level pay-per-view, I was like, dude, we had two big, you know, defensive backs that would block this from being the biggest match in the world.
Yeah.
They were the two, and they both took themselves out, and it's done.
Yeah.
Jericho and Omega, there's no match in WWE that's bigger than this for a buzz.
I don't think so. No,
yeah,
I don't have my finger on the pulse to that universe, so I don't know what guys would really buzz for there, but I felt like in the social media world, like, we really had
something. I do, and those were
of
the
course
two.
Yeah, yeah, so I'll take your word for it, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Two last questions. First of all, how big do you think this match was in expanding New Japan's presence in America?
Game changer, man. Mm-hmm. Game changer. Like, I think it was like the match that I did last year with Okada, it opened up a lot of eyes, and we brought a lot of new eyes to the product. Then we went to America, and people had an opportunity to see us live and in person at a half-decent time. You know, they didn't have to pull an all-nighter, and they could actually show up to the show and see what it looks like to watch New Japan live and in person. And I think we even aired it live on Access as well. So, you know, we got the feeling of watching our product live, and that was a big thing too. So, you know, we had a match that was heralded, and I'm talking about myself and Okada, by certain critics as one of the greatest of all time.
Some saying the greatest.
Yeah, some say that. And then, you know, I had another awesome performance, and just the whole crew had a great performance in L.A. as well. And
who did you work in L.A.?
It was a tournament, so I worked Elgin on the first night, and then a Jay Lethal and Ishii the next night.
Gotcha.
So just great quality opponents, great matches. Super proud of that performance. So I was able to put my best foot forward there again as well, you know, have emotional, heartfelt performances, you know, real new, strong style type of matches. And it was a great introduction to the Western market.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, how do you go above and beyond that? Like, on our biggest show, I had the best match of my career. Then we went to America, and I had 3 matches in 2 days in a tournament for a new belt. And it was this great, like, sort of like Rocky IV, like, glory moment. Everyone hoisted me up on their shoulders. And, yay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, we could do more of that. You know, what do I do from there? Is like, just have another good match.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
and that's what we talked about. What if the next one is only 5 stars?
It's like, exactly.
Omega's going down.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like
4 3/4. Oh, he's slipping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Whatever, maybe.
And that, And the thing is, too, like, people have their expectations set really high. So rather than trying to come up with, like, you know, your 5-star, 6-star formula and just sort of regurgitating that, I'd rather go out of my comfort zone and sort of like dig into my heart and my soul to tell these new and interesting stories that maybe, you know, other people may not be comfortable with.
Right.
Yeah. Like, cause everyone gets into a comfort zone, right? Like, okay, I did this. And this thing and this thing and this thing worked, so I'm just going to do it all the time because that gets the easy pop, and, you know, that'll guarantee me at least 3.5 stars in my match or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's just how people think. And it may, to like a wrestling purist, get you those 3.5, 4 stars. But is it going to make people feel anything? Is it going to make people remember anything? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be already out of their minds by the time the show's over. So to really come up with these news stories and to tell them from, you know, a deep place within the heart and soul, and then have what we did, which is something completely different. I really felt that that sort of kicked New Japan into that, you know, the Phantom gear. You know what I mean? There's like it was completely different from the Okada thing. It was completely different from anything I did in America. I did another great G1 run as well.
Right.
But it was like, this was so different in like a complete different universe, but the highest of quality that I think it could be the next thing to catapult New Japan even higher. And not only that, but I'm sort of on a mission to also just sort of open the eyes of the wrestling world as well. Like, I just want wrestling in general to be cool again. You know what I mean? It's not us versus them. For me, like, I'm not trying to say like, ha ha ha, you know, like beat that WWE or anything. It's nothing to do with that at all. Actually, I want more than anything else to have everyone be open to collaboration ideas. You know what I mean? Like, I want this wrestling world to be just a happy place for all the boys to live in. And I would, you know, as much as I love my guys in New Japan, I have a lot of respect for the guys there, and a lot of my friends are there. And I don't like, yeah, there's perhaps a war between the fans, and I'm maybe hated by some of the fans there because of the things I say in character. You know what I mean? But the truth is, you know, I really respect a lot of guys there, and a lot of them I can consider dream opponents. Right. And you being one of them. And now that that's been done, I feel that we've shown like, hey, guess what? These two forces can coexist. And when they clash, it's freaking magical.
You know what I noticed too about it though is that for me, I said to compete with the WWE, aka compete for the wrestling fans' money.
Yeah,
you have to do something different.
Yep.
And New Japan is different.
Mm-hmm.
You just look at Wrestle Kingdom, the different styles of all the matches, the lack of, I'm not going to say handcuffs because handcuffs isn't a good word, but there's a certain style and a certain formula in WWE as far as how things are approved, how things are done. So even Jericho coming to Japan, it was like, we love Angry Chris and this whole Alpha. The Alpha character was never a character.
No.
It was just the name.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when I talked
to him, tagline.
It's a tagline for Alpha vs. Omega, which is the one thing Vince didn't like.
Right.
Was they won't even understand Alpha. Don't use Alpha. And guess what the name of his football company is? Alpha Enterprises, which I'm sure he'd already had trademarks. He's like, don't use that Alpha. But yeah, it was never supposed to be a character.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I grew his hair out. I grew my hair because my barber went on vacation for a month. I went on tour for a month and I thought I'd grow it out of it. But it became this thing. So now Jericho, New Japan, is a whole different thing. He worked with Omega, and Gato was smart too, because knowing if you want to be different, which New Japan is, but you also have to have some accessible Americans, Canadians.
Definitely.
You know? And I think all of those factors led to being a real big draw for this show, which led to, I think they did like 25,000 subscriptions for their New Japan World in one day.
Yeah, it was something. Yeah,
ridiculous.
It was a big boost.
Expanded a big boost.
Yeah.
Last question: What were your favorite parts of the match?
Oh man, like I'm such a fan of just improv in general, because I mean, you know, nailing your spots and stuff. Like, I just do that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like now, like, I'm not a move guy whatsoever. I don't have any moves like at all. So like, of course the couple moves that I do have, I'm probably going to hit half decently, you know? So it's like when we did that stuff on the outside, like the cross body to the, you know, through the crash and burn table, like the fact that it didn't work out how we pictured it, the fact that we had to cut that moonsault and just say like, hey, let's just play around out there. And like, you know, here's this megastar, Chris Jericho, and, you know, kid from that came from the backyard in Winnipeg. And, you know, I'm sort of doing my own thing and have my own idea of wrestling. And it's like, am I going to impose my ideas on this guy on the fly? And it's like, well, it's on the fly. And then it worked out awesome.
Of course
like,
you should. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Match. Yeah. And that's the thing. It was just.
You don't have to tell me for you.
No.
I understand the concept of the business. If you're
right.
If you put a table on me and start climbing up,
yeah, exactly.
You're probably going to jump on me.
Right. Yeah, right? For sure. But I mean, like, I'm talking about like sort of like maybe a fan opinion being like,
oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. We're like, how dare he? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or how dare they? But yeah, I mean, that part was really fun. Yeah, just the physicality. There were no dead spots in the match.
Mm-hmm.
There was no wasted time. There was no...
Right from the start.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to use the term rest hold, but sometimes that's exactly
what
it is.
There was never a hold.
There was never a hold. Aside from you trying to finish me with the walls.
Right, right.
You
know there's never a rest or wear down hold.
If right, yeah. But because sometimes, you know, just you're sucking wind and huffing and puffing, you got to do something.
Well, that's just the style because you want people to start chanting.
Yeah, exactly.
Every WWE match, if we're working, I would yes. put you on hold so they could start chanting Kenny or whatever.
Yeah, or like, we got to go to commercial break. That's you know, it. Here we go. You know,
here
yeah.
we go. Absolutely. Yeah. That's a good point. That was 35 minutes.
And it was constant movement.
With nothing.
Everything yeah. flowed into each other. Like, those types of details are the stuff that I liked a lot. So it wasn't so much like, yeah, I love the way. And I said this to you, like, I had that one sweet knee before I actually,
great.
Before I did the roll up into the walls. And like, yeah, I love that. But I mean, I knew I could hit that knee good. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, I love it. But like, I love the stuff that you can't choreograph, that you can't create. It just happens due to the circumstance of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the first time we've ever made contact aside from the attack. You know what
never
I mean?
Never had a match ever.
Yeah, yeah, never actually, like, worked a wrestling match.
Yeah.
And here we are just creating what a lot of people are saying was match of the night. A lot of people are saying was the match of my career. Yeah.
Dave Meltzer said.
Yeah. Like, a stand-up performance for me. Like, it unlocked this new thing, you know, this new character
style,
potential for me.
Yeah,
this new style. Like, and for me, like, it actually makes me excited, like, if I go about it again, I feel like I could do it even better now too. Like, it's just,
yeah.
I don't know. How about you? What was your favorite?
I love the table where you jumped on me. I just thought that was a perfect spot that we should have thought of, but we didn't. But when the time came, we got it.
We just did it. Yeah.
I loved, the one winged angel into the walls. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No.
And
I like you taking pictures of the camera and then taking a picture of yourself flipping everyone off.
Yeah. I want to see that camera. I want to see that guy. So he's out there, man. But like I said, to me, it was just an incredible experience. And after the last, gosh, I think Don first called me about this in June.
Yeah.
Here we are in January. And it's been like the 6 months of all this excitement and buzz. And
so worth it.
You know, beginning, middle, end, it couldn't have been any better. So if this indeed was the best match of my career, I thank you for helping with that and for making for, if nothing else, a fun night at the fights.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite performances of my career and, you know, just an incredible joy to this entire angle. For I guess for everyone that has tuned in with us since the beginning,
and also too, I've said this too, like with three Winnipeggers orchestrating the biggest match, and anybody that wants to talk about Calgary, I say Calgary is a great city, but it is wrestling mecca of Canada.
Yeah, they got great bike trails, but you know what I mean. Let's not compare wrestling ability now.
That's right, especially in 2018.
For sure.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Kenny Omega. What a great performer. Kenny is he's got nowhere to go but up. And what an experience it was. What an honor to be working with him. Like I said, the last 6 months have been so much fun. And now that it's over, I want some more. Will I be back in New Japan Pro Wrestling? You never know. But I sure would love to have a rematch against Kenny Omega. Maybe you'll see an Alpha versus Omega 2 somewhere in the near future. But until then, you can always check out this show and hear the inner workings. Just go back and watch the chair fall apart in my hands as I go to hit Kenny with it. That's all rock and roll, guys. That's show business. It was one of the greatest matches of my career. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thanks to Kenny Omega. Thanks to fellow Winnipegger Don Callis for helping us bring Alpha vs. Omega to New Japan Pro Wrestling. And you can talk to Don about it in person if you join us for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Don's going to be on the cruise. He and Paul Lazenby will be doing some live podcasting for Killing the Town. We set sail October 27th. And remember, for as little as $150, you can reserve your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. You still have a few days left. If you book your cabin by January 15th, you will get a picture with me and the list. I'll even put you on the list if you want me to. Everyone's always asking me, how do we get on the list? This is how you can get on the list. Get your cabin before January 15th. You still got some time. ChrisJerichoCruise.com and be a part of everything. And remember, everything is included in the price. All the food, all the activities, all the live podcasts, stand-up comedy shows, rock and roll concerts, meet and greets, signings. You want to get a picture taken with Don Callis? You're going to get one for free. It doesn't cost you anything. All you got to do is reserve your cabin, and everything else is included in the price of admission. Food, all you got to pay for is alcohol and gambling. And remember, if you book your cabin by January 15th, you get a picture of me with the list, and you'll be able to come hang on the ship with all these incredible guests, and it's all for free. Hang out with Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Raven, the Keeping It 100 crew, Disco Inferno, Conan, Shane Helms, Beyond the Darkness will be telling some stories with Tim and Dave, Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing the hilarious unprofessional wrestling show. It's like Mystery Science Theater for wrestling. Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Jim Brewer, some of the funniest comedians in America making you laugh. Jim's got his great rock and roll band, the Loud and Rowdy, blaring it out there. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons, Fozzy, Judas just passing 13 million views on YouTube. Painless is already in the top 40, and the campaign hasn't even started yet, the radio campaign. King, the Stirs, the Dave Spivak Project, the Darlings of Rock and Roll, the Cherry Bombs, the world's greatest AC/DC cover band, female, Shoot to Thrill, the world's greatest Ozzy Osbourne cover band, male, Blizzard of Ozzy, Dave LaGreca, Busted Open is going to be there, and of course, the Coup de Grace, the Ring of Honor, presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches will be happening in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. So who's going to be there? The Young Bucks, the villain Marty Scurll, the Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, the American Nightmare, Cody, don't call him Rhodes, Cody's wife Brandi Rhodes will be there. We'll be announcing more big names in the upcoming weeks. Adam the Hangman Page is going to be there. So much stuff coming up, but we're ready to rock with you. We're ready to rock with you at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Reserve your cabin now, and we're going to keep the rock and roll going, because coming up Friday, one of my favorite singers of all time from one of the biggest heavy metal bands ever, Bruce Dickinson of Iron Maiden, returns to Talk Is Jericho. He's sharing stories from his new autobiography, What Does This Button Do? And Bruce is a trip. He's great. Nothing but big shows for you now that we're here on Westwood One. We're so excited to be on Westwood One. We're so excited to see you on Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. And if you haven't seen Alpha vs. Omega, go check it out now. You can see it on Access TV. You can go back and watch it, New Japan World. Business went through the roof with Alpha versus Omega. Subscriptions for the New Japan World streaming site went up 30%. The crowd was sold out. That went up like 45%, something along those lines. Huge, huge numbers for Alpha vs. Omega. So if you haven't seen it, go check it out now. And if you want to hear Bruce Dickinson tell you some great stories, he's going to be here on Friday. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy 2018. We'll see you on Friday. Until then, in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!